Well, hi, everyone. I'm Doug Hoy. I'm the CEO from the National Community Pharmacists Association, and this is my first gig as hosting the Independent RX Forum. Jack Moslem, our VP of Communications, has given me the wheel today, so I'm really pleased to have an outstanding guest with me today, Lynn Fruth, the owner of Fruth's Pharmacies in West Virginia, Ohio, and Kentucky, I think, are where you're located. And so, Lynn, great to have you on the show today.
Pleasure to be here. I look forward to talking about the future of the independent pharmacy space.
Well, that's exactly right. And we were going to talk about the independent pharmacies and regional chains with your, is it 30 stores that that Fruth's has that you own?
Well, we used to have 30 stores, but now we only have 28. Because like many of the other chains and independents that are feeling the pressure, we have had to look at underperforming stores. And so we now operate 28 stores.
Well, and that's kind of the crux of this show is to look at, you know, we'll talk some about the closures of regional chains and independents, but our major focus is going to be on the more recent announcements of closures of the major chains. So those have been very public. Just a few examples of CVS saying it's closing 10% of its stores, 900 stores. Walgreens closing hundreds of stores. Rite Aid rumored to be filing Chapter 11 bankruptcy, and which will result in speculation is several hundred stores. Grocery store closures and Walmart asking for voluntary salary reductions, and the list goes on and on and on. And they seem to all have hit in a fairly short amount of time in the last year or two. Most of those. So just maybe to start things off, Lynn, what do you make of all this, all these chain closures over the last, say, year or two?
Well, I think the most significant thing, and I serve on some committees with some of these different CEOs or representatives from some of these larger organizations, and when the Walmarts and the Walgreens and the CVSs or the Rite Aids don't have the economy of scale to make it, then you really have to question the viability of pharmacy as a retail operation altogether, because up until now, they've been pretty immune to the pressures that the regional chains and the independents have felt with the poor reimbursement and not being able to purchase as well. But now we're seeing it really everywhere, which tells me that reimbursement has gotten to a break point and that we can no longer count on the wholesalers to be able to continue to cut prices enough to help their customers remain viable. So it really is all about just the bottom dropping out further and further of the reimbursement. That when you start having Walgreens closing stores and Walmart and other large chains, it doesn't work financially anymore.
So I've said a few times that independents and regional chains have been the canaries in the coal mine when it comes to the economic environment of pharmacy, because we've seen closures of independents, and on the regional chains, we've seen some the sale of a number of regional chains over the years. What do you think gave these big guys, the Walgreens, CVS, Rite Aids, the immunity that has, we'll say, delayed the impact on them that they're maybe now feeling, and maybe dig in a little bit deeper as to how they've lost that immunity or how has that immunity changed?
Well, I think that the biggest thing that's happened is the whole vertical integration of healthcare to me, the big lie is that vertical integration of healthcare saves money and that PBMs save money. And anytime I go and speak about this at the legislature, I always say, well, there's one good way to prove if that's in fact the case. If PBMs actually saved money, we would be seeing lower prices for the consumer, and we're not. If just situations that happen with these large chains, I think they were in a position that they had so much market dominance that the PBM had to have them. for the coverage, to meet the requirements for the minimal amount of stores from a nationwide perspective. So I think there's been a long thought belief among regional and independent pharmacies that your Walgreens and your CVSs and maybe others were given better reimbursement overall than, say, a regional chain or an independent. Because if one guy out in Toledo, Ohio drops out of the network, his two stores, it's not going to create an access issue for a big PBM. But you've got to have CVS, you've got to have Walgreens or Walmart in some combination to meet the requirements that CMS puts out there for access. And then the second thing is they've been able to buy better. Mm-hmm. You know, they've long since been in buying arrangements with the wholesalers. You know, CVS had Red Oak, and Walgreens became very involved with Amerisource and others. They were able to buy direct from manufacturers. And so we know that they've always been able to get a better cost of goods than most of us others. So if they can't make it, who can make it? That's the real question.
Right, right. And we're going to get into the access issues in just a few minutes here. You know, one thing, Lynn, that I sometimes hear from legislators, and I'm just wondering if maybe you've heard the same thing, is a real focus on foot traffic. You know, so really not paying as a legislator might say something like, well, the reimbursement may be low, but just think that, I mean, this was maybe we're talking about anti-steering laws where NCPA is promoting anti-steering. And, you know, a legislator might say, well, you know, the reimbursement may be bad on the prescription, but you're going to have a lot more people coming in the pharmacy. Now, isn't that a good thing? And, you know, it's sort of an antiquated notion from maybe 40 years ago, but, maybe can you talk about that a little bit? Because I know Fruits is, you know, you sell other things besides prescriptions. You're in communities where you're maybe sometimes the kind of the general store for that community, because other, you know, the big boxes are far away. But can you kind of talk about that foot traffic notion and maybe even get into, you know, we briefly mentioned Kroger, Winn-Dixie, is getting out of the pharmacy business. The Albertsons Kroger merger is proposing to probably close several hundred of their pharmacies or sell the files to CVS and Walgreens. But kind of that whole foot traffic is good, man. Foot traffic's going to really build your bottom line.
Well, I'll tell you, it's interesting because I was at the Capitol this week meeting with the new director of the employees insurance. And I was telling him that every time we filled a prescription for that plan, we were underwater on every single prescription. We were $6 under our cost on every single prescription, 5,000 this month, 5,000 next month. And he jokingly said to me, Does it help any that I come into your store and buy growlers and potato chips? And I said, you can't buy enough growlers and potato chips to make up for 85% of your business being operated at a loss. And so unless we can get to the point where we can sell a bag of chips for $200, that notion just doesn't hold weight anymore, because you have to be competitive in that space too. Most of your chain pharmacies, and by that I mean your regional, your guys that have 20 stores or 15 or 50, they might have 20% of their sales in their retail. It's usually less. It's probably closer to 15% or less. And then you get to independents and it's 5% or less than that. So you cannot make up the volume on the front end because you're not selling enough dollars. So that whole concept of traffic just doesn't hold any weight. And then I go in and I work a store one day and I see 50 people come in, walk straight to the pharmacy, pick up their prescriptions and walk straight out the door. they're not buying anything else. They're just picking up their prescriptions. So no, the foot traffic argument is totally without any merit. Then you talked a little bit about the groceries and the closures there. I think the big thing you're seeing there right now is that you're having neighborhood grocery stores. They may be part of a bigger chain. They may be 20, they may be 50, they may be 200. They're seeing that pharmacy cannot be operated without it being a significant loss. And so they used to be happy with the concept that, well, we want that pharmacy customer to come in here and be a grocery shopper because that's where we're making our money. So if we break even on the pharmacy, that's fine. Well, they're not break even anymore. And so now they're saying, okay, we're giving 1,000 square feet in our store to have this pharmacy, which is a highly complicated, very compliance-driven, high-risk, high-cost, high-cost of inventory, high-cost of employees, business that is losing money. And maybe we'd be better off to put something in that 1,000 square feet that we could make a profit on and get out of the pharmacy business. We've seen a lot of grocery stores exit in the last 2 years. And it's primarily been those chains or small operators with less than 100 stores. And they sell the file. The file gets moved. It might get moved right down the road, or it might get moved 6 miles down the road. And now that customer's been displaced. And so especially in your Medicaid heavy areas, your Medicare heavy areas, now that ability of that senior citizen or economically, you know, deprived individual who is saying, I can afford to make one trip a week, go to the grocery, get my prescriptions. Now they're in a situation where they don't have access because I talked to Senator Manchin from West Virginia about this a lot because he gets it. And I say, it doesn't matter if it's 10 miles. If you don't have a car, it might as well be 100 miles. Or if you don't have access to transportation, and most of our rural markets have absolutely no public transportation. So now you have people largely dependent on, can I afford to make the trip? Can I find somebody who will drive me? And as I say frequently, I don't think about the cost of getting in my car and driving 20 miles to the mall. I'm not in that financial situation myself, but many of our customers are. So for them, an extra trip to town, as we call it, could be a half a tank of gas. And a half a tank of gas equates to a certain amount of money that they've budgeted. So they are thinking before they make these trips. So there's an added cost to your patient. And I think that we are creating some access issues both in the urban poor areas and in the rural poor areas.
Yeah, I know exactly what you mean, Lynn. It's been a while since I've practiced, but when I did, people would come in, as you mentioned, into town. That was, Thursday morning or whatever day of the week. That was their morning to come into town. They were going to run their errands, do their grocery shopping for the week. They might go to the beauty salon, get their hair done or whatever. And that's their trip for the week. That, Thursday morning, Tuesday morning, whatever day it was. And in those instances where, they didn't have a refill on their medication and, we're reaching out to their physician to get an okay. It wasn't an option for them to come back, tomorrow. And so we often had to find, we'd often have to give them a week's worth, especially for the maintenance medications and things like that, because they weren't going to be back till next week if the doctor's office hadn't called back. And I think, you're in West Virginia, Ohio, and Kentucky, explaining that to decision makers, think is really important, because a lot of these decision makers are in urban areas and they don't always get it. They don't always get that there's a, I know, you know, my kids have grown up in an urban area. They don't get that some stores aren't open on Sundays, or some stores close at 6 o'clock, or, you know, so I think that's an added for the listeners, that when we explain what's really going on is from an access issue, sometimes we have to, you know, paint the picture that the world that these decision makers live in is not the whole world. That's not everyone's world.
Well, that's absolutely right. And one of the things that I speak about in Appalachia, all of our stores in West Virginia, Ohio, and Kentucky are all technically in the part of the United States that's considered Appalachia. So these are all very low socioeconomic counties. In Ohio, we are in the 8 worst counties for health outcomes in southeastern Ohio. So of the 88 counties in Ohio, we're in the bottom 10% in terms of poverty, health outcomes, et cetera. So lack of transportation. I will get complaints from customers if something happens and they come and thinking they could pick up their prescription, and they will say to me, you know, it's not free for me to drive here from my house. You know, I live 20 miles out of town. There's a cost to this. And you need to understand that when you don't meet that expectation, that's a cost that I don't always am able to afford. So definitely in your poor areas, and most of us do not really understand the fact that there are a lot of people with access to no transportation, and they literally rely on a niece or a neighbor to once a week or once every 2 weeks take them to the grocery, to the pharmacy. We've had customers, we have a town in Ohio that is the only, it's the only pharmacy in that town. The other pharmacies are at least 20 minutes away. And a lot of those elderly folks say, you know, I can walk here in the good weather. I live a few blocks away. I can walk here. If this pharmacy wasn't here, I don't know what I would do, because nobody's going to deliver to me from 30 minutes away. So it is very much of an issue. And it's also the same thing when you talk about, you know, the urban areas. And Cincinnati's not that urban, or you might say Toledo or Cleveland, but, you know, those are urban areas. And the difference there is the difference between being 3 blocks from your pharmacy and being 12 blocks from your pharmacy doesn't sound like a lot until you don't have a car. Mm-hmm. And now it's become an insurmountable distance for a person to be able to get there on foot or to manage some type of public transportation. And oftentimes our oldest and poorest patients are the ones that have the most trouble with mobility, and it just doesn't work. So you can't just say, well, hey, there's another store that's, you know, just a mile away. There again, if you can't make that, I will tell you an anecdote that happened when we were doing the COVID vaccines. I heard about a very poor and predominantly Black community in Charleston that was having difficulty getting access to the COVID vaccine. And I said, I'm going to go in there and give shots. So I reached out to one of the pastors at a local Black church, and we made arrangements to go to this church on the west side of Charleston. And we had 800 people sign up, and we gave them a ticket to come and get shots. And there were 2 people that came in there that day that it just like was a reality check. One lady had just been released from the hospital a day or two before from having surgery. She took a taxi to the church to get the shot. And we said, you're free to go. She said, well, there are 13 taxi rides ahead of me, so it's going to be several hours. And this is somebody recovering from surgery. And I said, my son was there working that day. And I said, Michael, go get my car and take this lady home. And somebody said, aren't you worried about the being liable? And I'm like, no, it's the right thing to do. Later in the afternoon, another lady came in dragging a huge oxygen tank. She had come on the senior citizen bus. By the time she got to the steps, she was so winded. I said, just sit down right here. We'll have one of the pharmacists come out and give you a shot here. And she said the same thing. I wanted the shot so bad that I brought the big oxygen so I wouldn't run out, because I know it might be 3 hours before the bus can pick me up.
And Charleston's not a big town. Charleston's not a, it's not a, I mean, it's a big town for West Virginia, but it's not, you know.
No, it's 50,000 people.
Yeah.
And again, I said, you know, to our staff, hey, somebody go get my vehicle and drive this woman home. And I said, those are the things that a CVS or Walgreens is never going to do, because they would be too risk adverse to say we're ever going to put a patient in our personal car. And when people said to me, don't you worry about that? And I said, no, because it's never the wrong time to do the right thing. And I also think those people are going to leave and they're going to remember, wow, you know, I could still be sitting down there for 3 hours, but somebody cared enough to say, no, we're going to drive you home. That's what we call OC, our customer. That's predominantly what makes up our customer base, which is why I think that Fruith speaks well to the significant impacts on what I call the oldest, the poorest, and the most isolated.
Yeah. Well, let's talk more about the access. So with the chains, number of chains closing, and you know, it's hard to calculate the total number with the, you know, 900 CVSs, and not sure what's going to happen with Rite Aid, but it, you know, if the rumors are true, you know, it's likely several hundred. We do know about 400 of Winn-Dixie's getting out of the business, several hundred of the Albertsons, Kroger's, if that deal's approved. So not sure, but it wouldn't be out of the realm of possibility to see 2,000 or 3,000 just chain pharmacies close in the next couple of years. Now, let's talk about this from a business, from an economic standpoint. So whether it's Fruith's or an independent or someone who's another pharmacy that's, or someone listening to this podcast, let's just say it's a couple thousand chains that close in the next couple of years, just hypothetically. Those patients have to go somewhere. So isn't that going to be automatically, just without even thinking about it, and especially from a politician's viewpoint or decision maker, aren't they going to say, look, this is gravy for you. You know, those patients, your business is going to improve, right? Right?
Well, I wish that were the case, Doug, but part of the problem, yes, we are certainly going to have an opportunity to have access to patients that are going to be displaced. Many of these patients are going to need services that cost money, like delivery. But the bigger issue is last year, Kroger left the Express Scripts PBM market. Mm-hmm. And essentially just said, you know, we're not going to continue to fill prescriptions below our cost. When that happened, all those Kroger patients got displaced. And a lot of them ended up at our pharmacy. But the problem was, a lot of that business was business where we were already losing money. These were prescriptions that we were already filling at a loss. So, yeah, my husband came home and told me, hey, one of the guys I work with says his Kroger's won't take his insurance anymore, so he's moved all this stuff to Fruith. And my husband said, yippee, more unprofitable business. So we are picking up business that another pharmacy has already determined financially is not viable. So that's like, how many watermelons can you sell for 50 cents less than they cost and stay in business?
Right. Now, and you may not want to answer this for Fruits, Lynn, and I might advise you, you probably shouldn't, but that never stops you. I know that never stops you. But I get the question. So for those patients, so those patients are coming to your pharmacy. The economics are real. I could call them unprofitable patients. I feel kind of dirty talking about, people that way, but unfortunately that's how medical practices, that's how big chains, that's how big business thinks about these patients is, are they profitable or not? So do you see a day where some of these unprofitable patients, because their insurance pays so, so poorly, that pharmacies aren't going to be able to take them on as customers, as patients, and turn them away? And they have to turn them away because they're going to drive the pharmacy out of business.
Well, that situation has existed for a long time. And my father, who started in 1952, there was a point in time with reimbursement where he jokingly would say, I would have been better off to walk to the cash register, hit no sale, take a $5 bill out, hand it to the guy and say, please go get this filled at Rite Aid. And he would joke about it, but we never turned away customers. There's a couple things that you have to think about in that scenario. One is it's against your contract with the PBM to turn away unprofitable business. I also say we're the only business in the world where the buyer of your services or product gets to tell you that they're going to pay you significantly less than it costs you for that product. So I see this all the time in reverse. I see patients coming into Fruits who say, the Walgreens or the Rite Aid or the CVS in some town, they said I should, they told me I should come here and get this. And when you pull the prescription up, you look at it and you say, they're actually choosing not to fill this because it's such a loss. We would see that when we would have a shortage in the market, like when doxycycline went crazy and it was costing you $1,000 and you could get reimbursed a couple hundred, the chains quit filling it. They said they were out of stock. All those prescriptions came to us. All those people came to us. And if you really care about the people in your community, your neighbors, you're not going to turn them away. But financially, it is putting your business at risk. What I see happening is a lot of your independent pharmacists who could be working at a CVS or Walgreens for $135,000 a year or more are running their own business and they're taking $60,000 out, or they're putting their own money in to keep their practice going. And they're doing it because they went into pharmacy to help people. And that's our goal. But at some point in time, you have to be able to pay the expenses to keep your doors open. And I believe that we are at that break point where every pharmacy, except for CVS, because they're not really a pharmacy, they own their own PBM and all that, and they get to decide where the money goes and how people get paid. But all the other pharmacies are beginning to question how they can survive in the current economics. You've had, the CEO at Rite Aid out, the CEO at Walgreens out, another CEO at Walgreens out. And if you think about it, my husband made a great analogy about the Walgreens CEO. He said, you had a person running Starbucks where you took a 50-cent product and you're able to sell it for $5, and you put them into a business where you got a $5 product that they want you to sell for 50 cents.
Yeah, good. And so What do you think? I mean, you're talking about something's got to give. And of course, I agree with that, because can you see a day where patients have difficulty getting a prescription, just a regular maintenance med, blood pressure, diabetes, asthma prescription filled? Do you see that day coming?
I think we're going to really see some access issues that are going to have such far-reaching implications that no one can even fathom. And I've talked at the Ohio Senate, and, you know, talk about, you know, and I usually end with, if you think healthcare is expensive now, wait until your poorest, your oldest, and your most vulnerable populations, whether it be rural or urban, no longer have access to what they would consider as their mainline provider, which is their pharmacist. They know their pharmacist more than they know their doctor. They see their pharmacist more than they see their doctor. They count on their pharmacist to triage them to a point. We have actually had in our stores, we have had people come in to talk to the pharmacist to say, do I need to go to the hospital or do I need to go to the doctor, who were actively having a stroke, a heart attack, gangrene, all sorts of things, where the pharmacist didn't just say, you know, Doug, you don't just need to go to the hospital. I want you to sit down. We're calling an ambulance.
Yes.
And oftentimes the patients don't know how sick they are. And so I think you're going to lose that kind of voice of reason that says, hey, if your blood sugar hit 500, you have got to get to the doctor ASAP, or you're going to have significant impacts. We have people come in. I've been in a pharmacy when older ladies have come up to the window to the female pharmacist and said, honey, I'm going to unbutton my blouse here. Can you take a look at this and tell me what I need to do? And what they're really asking is, am I sick enough to seek medical care? And a lot of times the answer to that question is yes. And that's one of the reasons that we've partnered to put clinics in our stores with clinics and healthcare providers, so that you sort of have that in your community. So if Fruth as a pharmacy is not viable, in addition to losing a pharmacy in 28 locations, you're going to lose 10 walk-in clinics that are primarily accessed by people who don't have transportation to the next town to the doctor, Medicaid patients, and those who don't have their own provider. And that's what I call that real gap care. And that's what a lot of pharmacies are providing right now.
Yeah, a lot, especially primary care. I mean, the primary care services, the unofficial screening services that you just described, Lynn, that's absolutely what's happening in pharmacies because of the primary care shortage across, and especially in the underserved areas. But you know, my parents are in a town of 35,000 people. It's not a major urban area, but even they have difficulty with primary care services. As far as a solution, so one of the things that NCPA is touting is in Medicaid and Medicare reform, because Medicaid and Medicare make up the average independent. It makes up about 50 to 55% of their business on average,
or more.
And in some cases, you know, a lot more. So just taking the mean, it's over half between Medicaid and Medicare. And one of the ways to reform these two huge programs is in a cost plus manner. And some states have done that. I think your state, you have several states, but West Virginia has done that. Maybe since it's happened with in West Virginia, where a lot of your stores are, understanding you've got stores in other states as well, but what's been the experience? And I guess, what are your thoughts on cost plus assuming the plus is reasonable being a possible solution?
Well, what we saw, so a couple things. We were at the same time period that this was going on, Ohio managed Medicaid was reimbursing at a rate that was equal to NADAC plus a dollar.
Yeah.
When your dispensing fee was in excess of $10 to $12. So we were, every store we had in the state of Ohio was unprofitable. And our stores and our other stores were allowing us to be able to keep those stores open. I actually said if we were only in Ohio, we probably would have gone out of business. West Virginia Medicaid moved to a straight NADAC plus dispensing fee, a professional dispensing fee of $10.50, and that was at a neighboring state's rate. And we found that we immediately saw a significant increase in our reimbursement. And what our state saw was that they saved $54 million in the first year while paying pharmacies over $100 million more. So they were able to pay the pharmacies fairly enough to keep them in business and still save over $50,000.
50 million.
So to me,
50 million, right?
50 million, 50 million. So to me, that says this money was all going to the PBMs out of state. So that is a really great model. So West Virginia put that model in for commercial business. At the same time, Ohio was looking at moving from their managed Medicaid to something because everybody had been, you know, screaming and yelling, and 250 pharmacies had gone out of business in the state of Ohio, and it was just a mess. So West Virginia puts in an NADAC plus model, and most of the PBMs complied. Some did not, but we immediately saw a fair, sustainable reimbursement on those claims. So you were not filling anything at a significant loss. We have plans that we fill every brand drug we fill, we lose over $100. That's hard to make up. So the cost plus model is very effective. I think the first step has to be to get all the Medicaid programs on it and let the state see that by taking the PBM out of the equation, you have to stop drinking the Kool-Aid that just because somebody tells you they're going to save you money doesn't make it so. And let the data and the money speak for itself. Ohio has moved to that model, sort of. They still have a PBM and they haven't really gotten their dispensing fee to where it was, but it's significantly improved that we've seen a slowdown in the closures in Ohio. But if the people listening want to see what happens when pharmacies are sold or closed, they need to go to the Ohio Capital Journal and read the articles that Marty Schladen has written about all of the CVS stores who dump another store's files in their store, don't add one employee, and you have 3 weeks, 4 weeks wait to get things filled. The control counts are all off. The store's a mess. It's just absolute havoc to the point where the legislature is looking at, you know, maybe drafting some laws to try to address it. It's become that big of a problem. So that's the first step. I think the second thing is we have to get to a point where on Medicare Part D, we get paid. You know, we should never be expected to be paid less than the cost of acquisition by government program. It's not up to Fruith Pharmacy or Walgreens or anybody else to subsidize the Medicare program. And we know that it drives people into the, you know, higher copays and more catastrophic care, but it's getting people to understand that the way you fix that problem is by getting the PBM out of the middle, taking all the profit, pay the pharmacies fairly, and save money for everybody.
Yeah. You know, the Medicare, one of the things that's just aggravated me and really, frankly, pissed me off the most is my tax dollars are going to help subsidize that, you know, the Medicare and Medicaid programs that are putting my members, our pharmacies, out of business. And so that's not a question. That's just a statement. But
yeah,
it's galling to me. But that cost plus model, that'll be something that's talked about a lot. The NCPA annual meeting's coming up next month, October 14th through the 17th in Orlando. So we're hoping a lot of listeners will see them in person at that meeting. Maybe just one last question, Lynn. And this has been great, by the way. Thank you for spending time on the Independent Rx Forum podcast with us. But I want to talk about activating patients. I've seen the policy maneuvers for a long time, and really it's at the proverbial end of the day, it's not until patients get fed up enough and, or they're either fed up or unfortunately harm comes to them because, you know, there's no access. They can't get the drugs they need. The weights at a, you know, we saw this during COVID that the weight at a chain might be, you know, was measured in days, not minutes or hours, like it is at an independent or a regional, or sometimes weeks. And we've heard some of the patients in states like, you know, in states where there's a lot of chains, you know, screaming, saying this is absurd. And I think that's led to some of the states being more interested and maybe some interest on a federal side. But the question is activating patients, you know, have you had any success with that? Or do you see opportunities to activate patients as, you know, if these, let's just say this hypothetical 2000 chains close and the payment levels stay the same, and these patients have a difficult time getting prescriptions filled, or they're, you know, going to a CVS and waiting, you know, 3 weeks to get a prescription. Do you see opportunities to activate patients? And also as part of that question, have you had any success in other things you've done where you've activated patients for reform, for change?
Yeah. Well, one of the things I think in the small environment where you really know your patients is two things. One is when we were at the height of this Ohio Medicaid issue, we actually asked all of our patients to sign a petition relative to this, to say how important it was to be able to have their local pharmacy open. And we got thousands and thousands of signatures that we were able to take. Another time, we actually got excluded from a Medicaid network, and it literally overnight displaced 2,000 to 3,000 patients. And often these were patients that got delivery. They didn't have access to a drive-through, and we were able to get our representative out there and to look at these stores and to really understand what it meant to not be able to go to this store at Fruit Pharmacy, but have to go all the way out there, you know, 20 miles to another store. And they went to bat for us. But then the other thing that happened was we started having every patient call. And there was a point at which we had every patient call that PBM came back to us and said, let's try to figure a way to work this out. So when they got so inundated with people saying, this will not work for me, I cannot get to this other store, I'm going to have to change plans, when it became a big enough problem to them, that's when they were willing to look at a solution that allowed those patients to get back and get care. The biggest issue is most of you're asking the least sophisticated patients, often the old, the poor, the isolated, those who don't have internet, to navigate the most complicated system, which is why it's critical that as pharmacists and people who are in pharmacy, that's why it's critical for us to advocate for those who are really probably not going to be able to advocate for themselves.
Yeah. And I love how you made it easy for them to advocate for themselves with them, you know, with the phone call, which that is technology they are very familiar with. So Lynn, thanks again for being with us on the Independent Rx Forum. Lynn Fruth, owner of 28 pharmacies in West Virginia, Ohio, and Kentucky. It's been fabulous talking with you. Thanks again for being on the podcast.
Been a pleasure.
For more information on the NCPA Annual Convention or NCPA membership,